Question of Balance with your host, Ruth Coplin. In the first hour of the show, we ask questions that matter, discussing topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show. I hope you've had a good week. Just to let you know, in the second hour, I'm pleased to be interviewing entertainment industry veteran Tarquin Gotch, music manager and publisher, legendary A&R executive, film music supervisor and executive film producer. Tarquin has had an amazing career, so I'm looking forward to talking to him. That's coming up in the second hour. But this hour, what are we discussing this week? Well, for questions that matter, we're considering, can restraint be as courageous as action? As usual, I've been out and about interviewing people on the street and getting their opinions. First, let's hear what Eric has to say. Hi, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
Eric Toll.
Well, thanks very much for stopping, Eric, for our Out and About feature. And this week our topic is, can restraint be as courageous as action? Firstly, I'm wondering, when you think of courage in a conflict situation, what is the first thing that springs to mind?
Well, being able to stay in the middle of it without running away, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah.
So you would be thinking of a firefight or something like that, do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of people are, I mean, any kind of conflict, whether it's a military situation or just an argument, a lot of people shy away from conflict, that it makes them uncomfortable and they want to leave, you know,
right.
Especially if you're getting shot at, you know.
Yeah. So a few years back, a British soldier, Major General Nick Carter, who at the time was in charge of the international forces in southern Afghanistan, suggested that soldiers could someday be awarded medals for restraint that prevents civilian casualties in combat. And this followed a strategic protocol put in place by the British Army called Courageous Restraint, where there was a strict set of criteria that had to be met to fire on targets so that civilian deaths were limited. So it's kind of like the absolute opposite of shoot first, ask questions later.
Right.
And both the protocol and the medal suggestion valued the concept that to hold fire and more fully assess a situation may increase the danger for the soldier and thus require courage. Does this kind of restraint seem courageous to you?
Well, I think it absolutely seems courageous because, it's always easier to just shoot and be assured that, you know, I mean, if you're in a guerrilla war, you don't know who the enemy is, so they're not like running around in uniforms you can identify, so you have to be able to make a decision at any point, you know. I mean, I knew guys who were in Vietnam who, you know, they didn't know whether little old ladies were carrying grenades in their purse, you know, and it takes a lot of nerve to be able to do that, yeah.
So there was quite a bit of derision about this medal idea. Rush Limbaugh, for instance, was particularly vocal about it, saying, after the Courageous Medal for Restraint, let's have another medal that works and plays well with the enemy medal. Like kids in kindergarten got gold stars, works and plays well with other children. He even went as far as to say that he could see Obama at the White House presenting the distinguished yellow cross, implying that restraint is not only not courageous, but is actually cowardice. Do you think this would be a common way of looking at restraint in combat as a kind of cowardice?
Well, I think that kind of opinion reflects an attitude that comes from the mainstream or the power structure that wants to reinforce the idea that all of the warfare that's going on is all for the better, and that these are really our enemies, and that Islamic people in general are our enemies, and that if we give them a break, you know, you're really just sort of placating people who are evil in some way anyway. And of course, that's a deeply flawed, narrow, stupid attitude. And the reality is that what they don't want people to know is how many innocent people are just being killed, you know. I read something about the NYU and Stanford law schools doing some research into the drone attacks and said that something like 9 out of every 10 drone attacks blew up the wrong people. So all of those people died because they thought some in particular insurgent was in some house, and they're just blowing up people's families. That's the stuff that they don't want people to know. So, you know, if you just make everybody your combatant and you poo-poo the idea of restraining yourself, then yeah, I mean, it's easy. Yeah. It's easier for the empire that way.
Yeah. I'm just wondering whether if there was such thing as a medal for restraint in these kind of situations, whether it might help change the mindset of how a conflict can be won, because it's what you're speaking to as well. I mean, there is this idea, particularly from America, and, you know, I am an American citizen as well, you know, that might is right, and that's the go-to way of resolving conflict. Do you think if there was some sort of recognition in terms of a medal that would help change that mindset at all, or do you not think it would really make much difference?
It might make some difference. I mean, I think there's an attitude in the military. I was in the Army many years ago, and the attitude in the military is, yeah, I mean, it's pretty, they teach you to not care. I mean, that's the whole point. You can't teach people to kill other people without sort of grinding away at their humanity in some sense. So it kind of goes against the basic military indoctrination. So there would be something, it would be a bit culturally dystonic, you know, it would be sort of swimming upstream, but at the same time, I think you have to start somewhere, you know, and that seems like a good place to start, you know. Encouraging people to value life, I think, is a good thing.
Yes. I mean, I'm in no way an expert on training of the British Army or the American Army, but I have noticed a difference in how they present themselves. For instance, there was an advertisement on British TV for people to join up to the army, and it had soldiers in a very highly charged situation with people somewhere like Iraq, you know, with, and it looked like it was going to escalate into a firefight. And then finally, at the end, the soldier took off his sunglasses. He had, like, mirrored sunglasses on, and he took them off. And then the whole situation was diffused because the guy, like, they could actually see each other.
Some humanity.
And I can't remember exactly what the tagline was, but it was, like, about seeing, changing perspectives, you know, can sometimes change a situation as much as action can. So that was like a really interesting advertisement, which I think I don't feel like I've seen anything along those lines with the American military. Again, I'm not saying I'm an expert, but do you think kind of putting some emphasis on that aspect might help? I mean, obviously in the context of art, you are being trained still to kill people.
Yeah, well, exactly. No, I think that that's, you know, something that they need to be able to, you know, if a place like Afghanistan is about winning hearts and minds, then you have to be able to not kill innocent people, you know? That's the thing that's driven most of the people into the arms of the insurgency. I mean, they shouldn't even be there to begin with. If you want to talk in a larger geopolitical sense, there, it's ridiculous for them to be there. It's about a larger strategy to control that whole region and, you know, ham in Russia and all this stuff. I mean, it has nothing to do with, you know, stopping terrorists and all of this nonsense that they try and cover it up with. It's really about a sort of imperial strategy. So they shouldn't even be there to begin with. But if they weren't, you know, if you have to deal with situations like that and you're just the individual soldier swept up in the, you know, events of history, then yeah, you know, I think, you know, I used to do counseling with guys who had gotten, you know, been through combat situations, and a lot of them begin to deteriorate later on in their lives because it's easy when you're young, you know, you can blow off stuff, you know, if you happen to kill somebody that's not, you know, it's a questionable situation, you just, you know, you're happy to be alive at that point. But later on, when the person starts to evolve emotionally, they deepen their sort of love of the world, then it starts working against them, you know, it starts to, they realize what they've done, and it becomes harder and harder and harder to live with, you know. And so there's a lot of these young guys that are in these situations that are just, I mean, they're going to end up, you know, alcoholics on the corner, you know. So if there's anything that can avoid that, that would be a good thing.
Finally, inner cities, we're also dealing with a war amongst the people in a way. You know, gang violence is really a war that's being waged amongst the civilian population. So it has definite parallels with conflicts like Afghanistan in that it also requires a kind of hearts and minds campaign. Do you think this idea of courageous restraint could also be of benefit within America in terms of how we deal with these situations and perhaps how our police force is trained?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the police are supposed to be there to protect and serve. And unfortunately, what we hear more often these days is that they're just like gunning people down in the streets. You know, that doesn't really come under the heading of protecting and serving in my feeling. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the problem is that globalism has sent huge numbers of jobs overseas. And there's this whole, the old industrial middle class has fallen into poverty. And so there's all of this tension in the country, and of course it reflects on the police. You know, they have to, you know, there's all of this joblessness and all of this this despair over the way the economy is generating. Everything's going up to the 1% and the rest of the people are having to live with diminishing returns on everything they do. And of course the tension's going to go up and the police are going to have to deal with it. And the more they're just, I mean, shooting people down in the street, I think, is moving in the wrong direction. They're basically moving towards a police state in a situation where people are just going to become more and more and more agitated.
Right. Yeah. So this idea of restraint, I mean, it seems like it, I mean, rather than shoot first, necessary. Ask questions later.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely necessary. There's no other, I mean, you either become a police state or the police have to use restraint. Yeah. I mean, it's one or the other, you know.
And I think this is where perhaps it's important to acknowledge that that kind of restraint does take courage. If you're going to take time to assess whether that person really does have a gun or it's a mobile phone, you know, you're going to have to put yourself potentially, perhaps, at more risk. And there is some courage involved in
Absolutely.
That. But at the same time, if we think that all lives matter, then, you know, one has to think that that time maybe should be taken not to make an error.
Well, that's true. I mean, when you look at the situation that happened with the big, what was the name of the guy that got killed by the cop in Missouri or wherever it was, you know?
There's so many
The one in that town. I can't remember what it was called now. But anyway, I mean, yeah, he gunned down that guy and the young man, I mean, he was a big guy, you know, so he was kind of menacing, but he wasn't armed, you know, and he shot the guy. And it turned, I mean, that shouldn't happen, you know. He should have been able to respond in a different way, you know. And he killed this kid in the street. Yeah, the guy was coming at him, but it's like, what? What are you doing, you know?
Yeah. There's that sort of idea of reasonable force of how you deal with a threat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously a very complex situation, and they're in a very difficult situation, but...
That's where the courage comes in.
Yeah.
You have to be able to have that courage. I mean, the police are in a position where they either are servants of the people and they're part of the public, they're part of the people, they're part of the sort of service that people depend on, and they're the friends of the people, or they're at odds with them, or they're opposed, or they're the enemy of some kind, you know. And if we have a society where the police become the enemy, I mean, we're really lost, you know.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more from Out and About after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Just goes nowhere.
It's a-
It's a Question of Balance music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com. The power of creativity is alive and well in our community, especially in our young people. Come and see for yourself at the 60th Annual High School Art Show at the Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz from May 2nd through 24th. This event provides the only professional gallery exhibition for high school age artists in our county. Students from local, public, private, charter, home, and at-risk schools are invited to benefit from the Art League's state-of-the-art space. The students include serious potential Art Academy majors, those fulfilling an elective, and first-time artists seeing a project through to the end. Self-esteem is enhanced, and everyone has fun. Admission is free to this great exhibition. Come and see what our young artists are creating at the 60th Annual High School Art Show from May 2nd through the 24th at the Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz. If you'd like more information, visit www.scal.org. That's www.scal.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations on our topic, Can Restraint Be as Courageous as Action? I've referred to the protocol of courageous restraint used in the British Army, and I'd like to play an excerpt from an interview Lieutenant Colonel Kitson, the commanding officer of the Three Rifles Battle Group, gave, where he explains his interpretation and application of the courageous restraint principle. And as explained on the Durham Light Infantry Museum website, in October 2009, men and women of the Three Rifles Battle Group arrived at Camp Bastion, Afghanistan. They were a force of 600 supported by gunners, engineers, and medics from other British Army units. Their mission was to maintain control of the fertile Upper Helmand Valley around the town of Sangin and the strategically important Kajaki Dam. In total, over 1,400 people would spend almost 7 months denying the Taliban access to populated areas, winning the trust of the Afghan people, and encouraging the local economy to grow. And to gain support of the locals, Three Rifles had to have a continuous visible presence on the ground. And this meant leaving the relative safety of their patrol bases to walk amongst the Afghan nationals. And the majority of patrols were on foot, as the nature of armoured patrol vehicles prevented soldiers from interacting on a personal basis, which was kind of the whole point. The aim of the patrols was to secure the economic prosperity of the Sangin district. And this meant keeping the main trading space, the bazaar, free from Taliban influence. So working closely with the Afghan National Army and police, checkpoints were set up on all the roads leading to the bazaar, the aim being to force the Taliban out to outlying areas. And patrols were the riskiest part of life for the riflemen. The constant threat from improvised explosive devices or IEDs forced patrols to keep on a path cleared by metal detector operators called Valon men, and progress was often slow. It was a challenging tour for Three Rifles. By the time they handed responsibility to 40 Commando in April 2010, 30 lives were lost and more were wounded, some seriously. Anyway, so this is what Lieutenant Colonel Kitson, who is the commanding officer of the Three Rifles Battle Group, had to say about courageous restraint.
Yeah, I'm not sure how politically correct in military circles the term courageous restraint is anymore, but it's certainly one that was out there and I think was pretty much coined when we were there. It probably does sound sort of slightly self-righteous and self-satisfied, but anyway, whatever the words are, I mean, I think it's a very important concept, which essentially, you know, I've already touched on some of the damage that's caused by approaching these problems in a purely military way. As we are trained in our conventional lives, you're a military force, you're advancing, you're attacking an enemy, all the sort of section and platoon battle drills, as we call them, reaction to effective enemy fire, locating the enemy, winning the firefight, suppressing the enemy, yeah, with all these wonderful things that we have at our disposal, artillery, fast jets, Apache. If you take, you know, if you take that approach in, you know, what is described as a war amongst the people, it might be all right in terms of addressing the enemy threat that you face, but it's not much good in terms of local infrastructure, and let alone collateral damage and civilian casualties and all that sort of stuff. So what it effectively meant was that we had to put aside a lot of that basic, you know, standard military training, and say, you may be under fire from an enemy, but you may not be in a position to win the firefight in that conventional sense. And you're certainly not going to start bringing in high explosive artillery into a sort of residential area, because there's a gunman shooting at you from a rooftop somewhere. And so what that meant was that our riflemen had to have the courage, as it were, to go forward and accept the fact that they can be a target at any moment, but they may not be able, or they probably wouldn't be able to respond with all the military hardware that they had at their disposal, even in terms of their own rifle, if there was any risk at all of collateral damage. So it's quite tricky. I mean, to be fair, it's nothing new, and I think we certainly experienced that sort of thing in Ireland, and we didn't have artillery in Ireland. But I think we don't know what it was, whether we'd sort of got off on a sort of slightly different step, thinking this was a war and the Taliban. And you know, to be fair to Pete, to the earlier phases of our particular part of the campaign, it was a question of formed hordes of Taliban trying to overrun the base in a very conventional style. Yeah. And it was needs must to respond in that way to stop them coming in and overwhelming you. That wasn't the sort of threat that we faced in our time, so perhaps in that sense it was much easier to exercise this sort of wonderful restraint, but it was certainly what we needed to do. Mm-hmm. And then in a sort of slightly more subtle vein, just patrolling around, and particularly with the suicide bomber threat in mind, you also had to have the courage to allow people to come near to you. Every single person you come across could potentially be a suicide bomber. Mm-hmm. And this is the, you know, dreadful and tragic challenge of that sort of method of operation that we've, you know, sadly seen in increasing amounts across the world. Mm. Is that it's very, very difficult to regulate against it. And the chaps, bearing in mind the sort of hearts and minds bit and winning the confidence of the locals and actually engaging with them and convincing them that we're here for their own good, you've got to patrol around and not keep everyone at arm's length. I mean, there are some of the training does have, you know, drills practiced whereby, you know, a patrol would, you know, arms up, fire mini flares and all sorts of deterrents to get people keeping away from you, just in case one of them might be a suicide bomber. Yeah. But, you know, it's pretty obvious that you can't engage with people that way. So you do require the courage to allow the people to mingle around you, the motorbike to sort of whiz past, and you. And that was the significance of checkpoints around the bazaar and things like that. You just needed to play a pretty cunning game to make sure you'd done all you possibly could.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. That was Lieutenant Colonel Kitson, the commanding officer of the Three Rifles Battle Group, talking about their campaign in 2009-10 in Afghanistan. So interesting to hear the perspective of a high-ranking military officer in the field about this idea of courageous restraint, and how it can help, and what it takes to actually carry out. We're considering our topic this week, can restraint be as courageous as action? And next for Out and About, I spoke to Mark and Dave on the street. So let's hear what they had to say. Hi, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Dave. and Mark.
Well, thanks, Dave and Mark, for stopping for our Out and About feature. This week, our topic is, can restraint be as courageous as action? First of all, I'm wondering, when you think of courage in conflict, what's the first thing that springs to mind?
Defending loved ones, defending righteousness, defending honor.
Right, okay. And for you, when you think of courage in conflict, what's the first thing you would think of?
Repelling aggressors.
Right, okay. So a few years back, it was put forward that it might be a good idea to have a medal for restraint that saved civilian lives, which is a sort of, in some ways, you know, counter idea to what one normally thinks of the military in terms of, you know, it all being about attack. I was just wondering if you see that kind of restraint in conflict as requiring courage as well?
Absolutely. I would say that we probably would have had a nuclear dawn would have already occurred had it not been for restraint at somebody at a very high level with a lot of pressure on them to act otherwise.
Right.
And my sense is that the Congressional Medal of Honor has been probably given to more soldiers who have saved their comrades than attacked other people. My sense is that my sense of medals being given for restraint and for protecting one's own already exist.
Right. I'm not sure if they exist exactly for restraint. You know, I think where you don't shoot and you also don't save anyone, but that's an interesting point that you bring up, that a lot of medals are definitely not necessarily for killing the enemy. They are for...
I don't think they give medals for killing.
I think one of the motives of restraint is selflessness.
Yeah.
So
putting oneself
at
risk to protect others.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, at the time this was brought up, there was sort of some derision. Rush Limbaugh was particularly scathing about it and sort of talked about, you know, Obama presenting the Distinguished Yellow Cross. So, you know, he was equating that kind of restraint in action with cowardice. I mean, do you think this is a common way of looking at restraint in that situation?
No, I think that's a man who's just trying to find ratings and keep people excited and upset and listening.
Right, okay.
I don't think the man has any moral compass, and I don't think even paying attention to him is worth anyone's time.
The high number of civilian casualties in conflicts not only are arguably immoral, but they alienate the local people from the occupying force, making it hard to win a conflict. And also, in many cases, high civilian casualties create new enemy combatants out of people who were previously neutral but are angered by their people's deaths. Both of these issues have been huge in Afghanistan and Iraq and have affected outcomes, which is why Hearts and Minds campaigns and limiting civilian deaths through restraint are so important and may actually help win the fight. With this being the case, why do you think that restraint's such a charged idea? Why does action seem to be valued so much more highly than not acting in military situations?
I think you still need a military response in most situations to a military assault. I think to sit back and practice restraint can be very costly.
Right. But we've been in these wars, which are kind of wars amongst the people, where you're having to wage a war amongst civilians. So that's where this is particularly pertinent.
A war amongst civilians.
Well, I mean, you're having to conduct the war in a civilian context, so there's a very high chance of killing civilians. So this idea that was brought in by the British Army of courageous restraint, there was a very, very high level of criteria that had to be met before you were allowed to shoot a combatant to make sure they weren't a civilian. And they called it courageous restraint because that obviously meant that the soldier could possibly be putting themselves at risk. And I think the British Army was very involved with this because they were in a lot of areas where they were in the civilian areas and having to do Hearts and Minds. Exactly, yeah, it's a similar kind of thing. And, you know, so you have to have the courage to let someone approach you knowing they could have be a suicide bomber or whatever, you know, because otherwise you're not going to ever win those people over.
And I would feel that the real indictment would be against the governing countries who propagate these things. England, United States, many, many countries. Strong arm. I don't think there is an agenda to win war and to nation build. I really believe there's a much more sinister, ulterior agenda. I'm very much a conspiratist, so
okay.
I don't trust anything at face value.
Right, okay. In our inner cities, we're also dealing with a war, with gang violence that's being waged amongst civilian population, which kind of has parallels to conflicts like Afghanistan. It's also a kind of hearts and minds campaign. Do you think this idea of courageous restraint would be of benefit in our police force training at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, they should be practicing that as if they're to uphold their motto to serve, protect, and defend.
And finally, do you think courage is proportionate to the fear that you feel?
Well, by definition, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the flip side of it, yeah. I would suppose. Yeah.
If there's no fear, there's no courage.
Right.
It's just bravado if you don't have fear.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Nice chatting.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and our topic discussion this hour, can restraint be as courageous as action? We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more from Out and About after these messages.
I'm Casey, and I'm the second-generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore, and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Nevada's wild horses are disappearing from our rangelands at an alarming rate. Every day, horses are rounded up, captured, sold, and sent off to be cruelly slaughtered for food overseas. The horses you see out your window today could end up on someone's dinner plate tomorrow. We simply must do something to save them. This great country was built on the backs of the horses. They helped us plow our fields, pull our wagons, and they deserve all the dignity and respect afforded other American icons. The horse helped us craft this nation we know and revere today. This is country music star Lacey J. Dalton. I have dedicated my life to save Nevada's wild horses, but I cannot save them without your help. Your generous donations are the only chance some of these horses have. Visit letemrun.com for more information. Join me. Nevada's wild horses are disappearing from our rangelands at an alarming rate. Visit letemrun.com.
A Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations on our topic this week, can restraint be as courageous as action? I wanted to remind you, if you'd like more information about the show, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. You can hear podcasts of all my shows there, and you connect with me if you wish on social media, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. So again, that's itsaquestionofbalance.com. We've had some very interesting topics and guests, so you can check them out there. And also, I wanted to say a couple of people this week commented that they might not have their arguments as articulately put together as they would wish when they were talking to me. And I wanted to say that with me stopping people on a Friday night on the street, asking often quite deep questions, really, I applaud anyone who puts their thoughts together at all to talk to me, especially when it's a topic that you might not have been thinking about. And I think this is part of the sort of magic of out and about, people on the fly giving their opinions, and then us as listeners having a similar experience of hearing questions for the first time and wondering what we would have said and what do we think now. So anyway, I want to thank everyone who did talk to me this week. And next up is Dawn. Let's hear what she had to say. Hi, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
Dawn.
Well, thanks very much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at, can restraint be as courageous as action? I'm thinking of this in terms of conflict situations. And I'm wondering, when you think of courage in conflict, what's the first thing that would spring to mind for you?
I don't think I'm particularly good at this.
I mean, do you think you would think about a fight, you know, where people are engaged in gunfire or whatever, or people perhaps running, you know, like the Somme, where people ran out to save their comrades, or, you know, do you have an idea of courage in conflict, or is it not something you really think about?
I do think about courage in conflict in terms of more mundane things, not so much as in war, because that's not my typical day-to-day experience.
Right.
So when I think about courage and conflict, I think about interpersonal conflicts
often. Yeah.
And it does take a lot of courage to walk towards personal conflict with, you know, integrity, honesty, and vulnerability, but that's maybe different than what you're looking for.
Well, I think that's very valid what you've said, and in a broader topic area that is obviously true. I'm trying to keep it just in terms of conflict because it is a big topic area. Where I think it's applicable, what you're saying is that this idea of courageous restraint is to do with the fact that a lot of the wars we've been engaged in are being fought in civilian situations. So there's a hearts and minds component in terms of wanting to win over the local people so that they're on our side, to make it easier to win, and also not to sort of create more terrorists, if you like, you know, by killing innocent people. So the British Army was trying to raise the bar for, you know, being able to kill an enemy combatant, that you had to be really, really sure that they were not a civilian. So they called it courageous restraint because they obviously felt like they had to flag that up, you know, that it did require courage to do that. I mean, does that seem obvious to you that that requires courage?
It does actually seem obvious to me, because when you're in such a difficult situation, you're definitely operating on fight or flight. And so it is more challenging to take a risk that the person is friendly than to just eliminate them.
Yeah. I mean, do you think awarding a medal would be a good way of honoring that kind of restraint, or try and change the mindset of how, you know, conflict needs to be dealt with?
I think any kind of positive reinforcement for that type of action is a good idea. Yeah, medals perhaps, and recommendations and things like that.
Mentions and dispatches things like that, yeah. I mean, in martial arts, the master is supposed to avoid a fight at any cost, even seeing physical combat as a failure in some ways. I'm just wondering if you think if we could see the courage in restraint more, whether that might help reduce our combativeness as a nation.
I certainly would hope so. And I do agree that it takes much more work and courage to avoid conflict than to just engage.
Yeah. In America itself, we have a sort of similar situation in some ways to these kind of wars amongst the people, in that, you know, gang violence in inner cities is a war that's being waged amongst the civilian population, and also requires a hearts and minds campaign. Do you think that this idea of courageous restraint would be a benefit to the training of our police forces?
Yes, absolutely. I'd love to see them operate under more restraint than violence.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of advantages could you see?
Less killings, for sure. I'm stating the obvious here.
Right, yes.
And fewer beatings and trauma all around.
Yeah. At the time that this medal was suggested, there was sort of some derision in the media, and, you know, some American service personnel were sort of saying, look, you know, we have the right to defend ourselves. So there was a kind of, there was a machismo about it, but there was also a misunderstanding of it, and not being that you're sacrificing yourself, but just trying to take some time to consider that all lives matter, and therefore you can't just shoot first and ask later. Do you think the bar should be that high in terms of conflict?
I do think that is a difficult situation to be in. Yeah. I wouldn't want to be in that situation myself.
No.
And I can understand their defensiveness. And I mean, it's just got to be a really scary place to be.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yes, I would love to see more peace and less conflict.
Yeah. At the same time, there was some equating this idea of restraint with cowardice. Do you think that that would be a general opinion of, you know, thinking that if you're holding yourself back in conflict for reasons of, like, saving civilians, that that's a cowardly thing to do? Or do you think that's more of a aberration?
Well, I personally don't think it's cowardly at all, but I may be in the minority there. I don't know.
Well, I think the psychologist, Dr. Stephen Diamond, and he said, courage is a kind of strength, power, or resolve to meet a scary circumstance head on. Courage is called upon whenever we confront a difficult, frightening, painful, or disturbing situation. Courage is not the absence of fear, but moving ahead despite fear. I mean, it seems with that kind of definition of courage that restraining yourself in a very dangerous situation may even take more courage, one could argue.
I completely agree with that, yes. I would think it would take a great deal of courage to try to get beyond that place of fight or flight.
Yeah. Do you think that if we could start thinking of restraint more, that that might reduce our combativeness as a nation at all?
I do think it's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Towards changing the way we see things and the way we operate in the world.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations this week for Out and About. Thanks to Dawn there for talking to me. And last up this week, I talked to CJ and Troy. So let's hear what they have to say. Hi, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
My name is CJ.
Troy.
Well, thanks very much for stopping, CJ and Troy. This is our Out and About feature. And this week we're thinking about, can restraint be as courageous as action? When you think of courage in a conflict situation, like a military conflict, what's the first thing that springs to mind for you, you know, if you think of courage?
Well, I think what most people get as well is probably, you know, what you see in the movie is a guy running through and shooting and picking up his buddy that's injured and carrying him out. To me, that's what I picture as courageous.
Right. Okay.
And then you're asking about restraint.
Yeah. Let me just ask you, what do you think of when you first think about courage in a conflict situation?
Same thing, helping your buddy out. You know, brothers in arms are people out there protecting our borders or doing whatever they need to do or whatever they're told to do, I guess, today. Not what they need to do, but to save each other, encourage helping each other's out, you know, I would imagine.
Right, okay. So that's a slightly different view. One is that, you know, like you say, the movie view of, you know, kind of the gunfight going in and winning the day. And the other, of course, is saving your comrades, no man left behind, all of that.
Sure.
So there was this idea put forward by a major general in the British Army for a medal for courageous restraint in situations where courage was shown, where you didn't fire and civilian lives were saved. And I'm wondering whether you could see this kind of restraint as requiring courage, you know, because it might possibly put you in a situation where your life is potentially more in danger, but in order to save civilian lives, you know, you actually refrain from a firefight or whatever, or at least try and assess the situation to a greater degree before you act. Do you see that as a form of courage?
It's hard to say, but yeah, I think it's it's more of a cerebral, kind of more of a smarter way of doing it, because you're thinking about what you do before your actions.
Right.
So I would say that's definitely brave, especially if you're considering saving lives.
Right.
You know, where, you know, we think of war, it's not really about saving lives. It seems to be more about taking lives.
Right, yes. You
know, so yeah.
Where does this come from? Where is your standpoint? What are you asking? Why do you ask? What is the end line of this? Who are you referring to? How our government treats the rest of the world? How we're policing the rest of the world? Or how are maybe we approach... What is this line of questioning from? What do you...
Well, what I do on my show each week is I take a different topic that just basically starts a conversation, maybe makes people think about something that maybe they haven't thought about before. So I'm trying to just put it out there to say, make people think for themselves. Do you think of restraint as taking as much courage as action? Because I think, you know, what you said about, you know, in movies and things like that, you see a lot more that, you know, the gunning down everybody, you know, is a more classic idea.
What comes up to my mind is why would there be any conflict needed at all?
Right. So do you think if the idea...
Do we have a fight someplace that we're battling? Are we battling, you know, countries right now that are we say that we're bringing democracy to the rest of the world. Do they want it? Do they need it? Do we even have the right to say they do? Why, you know, I don't think that takes any courage at all. I think that's just a matter of who is whose special interests are being, you know, involved, and who's using our government or using our military for their own warfare, their own personal wants and needs and personal agendas.
Yeah. So we take this idea, expand it out a bit then, this idea of restraint and not making violence the go-to for solving conflict. Do you think that we would be in less conflicts if we were trying to find other ways to approach them?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
Well, I know as the U.S., they claim that, you know, they try to do, you know, with, like, diplomats and that kind of thing, but... But it seems like it always ends up resulting in some kind of military action one way or another. I have to say, I think there is courage in trying to negotiate your way out of something or think about it before you shoot, if you will, you know? Again, I've never lived.
I don't know what the...
I never went to war. You know, I have to grow up in a time where, you know, we didn't have a draft and you know, I went to school instead. But and so I never firsthand got to see it.
Yeah.
But I could only imagine, and all I've seen is some either news or movies, you know? And so it's hard to say, you know, what I would do in that situation. But again, we're looking at it from a kind of a U.S.-centric point of view. And I think what you're looking more is a global-centric kind of view, right? You're like, where you're like, you know, maybe we would be better off just thinking before we send a drone in and bomb a village or whatever, you know?
Right, yeah. What were you going to say? Do you remember now?
when you're bullying somebody for oil, what is the point? What restraint is to be had? What are we restraining ourselves from?
Right.
I don't know how many Americans worry about restraint. I don't know. I think what the bottom, the end line is it going to affect our oil prices? Is it going to affect our economy?
Okay.
What is restraint? What are we restraining ourselves from?
Right.
What is this, you know, what is your question? Ask more about what are we restraining from?
Right. So you would be taking a more sort of cynical view that what I'm asking is almost irrelevant in a way, because there's a greater agenda of why we're in a conflict, and it's just about...
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, looking at it from that sort of cynical point of view, the conflicts that we are in are wars being conducted amongst civilian populations, and so there is a hearts and mind component. So even if your goal is just to get the oil or whatever, you still need to win that conflict, and to do that, you need to not turn the whole population into terrorists because they're so upset that you've killed all their civilians. So in that, even in that context, there is a sort of necessity perhaps to try and choose more when violence is used. And yet restraint doesn't seem to be valued very highly.
Restraint,
you know,
in oil, maybe? Restraining yourself, maybe restraint in the sense of you know, buying a Tesla and saving dollars that way and not supplying the oil. You know, you take oil away, you stop buying oil, and that takes a lot of power away.
Yeah.
Get Americans off of oil.
Yeah.
There's your restraint. Maybe not going on vacation and spending money wisely. You know, put solar cells on your roof instead of using oil.
Not all conflicts over oil, but the thing is, it restraints, let's say, harder and harder to show, and because it's becoming easier and easier to, with a push of a button, you know, like I said, you know, I mean, there's a guy in Colorado that's fighting a war with drones in the Middle East, you know, he's doing it on a video screen. And so it's really easy for him versus he's not there in person.
Right.
So it's a lot, let's say it'd be harder for him to show restraint, you know.
I mean, one could argue that you could take restraint, which wouldn't actually require much courage if you're operating a drone. I mean, if you're down on the ground and if you don't shoot the person you think might be a suicide bomber, you could be dead in a minute. If the person operating a drone decides to wait and see if that is a small child that just went into the house or not, that doesn't really perhaps take courage as such, not physical courage, because you're not increasing.
It's a different flavor of courage, I guess, or a different flavor of restraint, either one. Because it's just easier, it's more of a video game versus when you're there in person.
With you mentioning video games, I mean, do you think that there is a kind of glorification of conflict?
Absolutely. I mean, have you seen any video games lately? I mean, all the high dollar ones, the ones that sell, are all about first-person shooters blowing each other up.
They you don't get many points for waiting to see if they really are a civilian or a combatant.
There's no points for restraint in video games, you know, and there's definitely points for courage, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I guess to go back to the beginning of what I was saying about this idea of this medal for courageous restraint, I guess part of it was to try and change the mindset of how we're thinking about conflict and how we should approach it.
It'd probably be a good idea for the military to think about that as a awarded, I don't know, medal or something, as like, hey, you showed really good restraint and not blowing up the village versus, you know, you get a medal for, you killed 34 Iraqis or whatever, you know.
And 100 civilians, but you killed 34. Right. Exactly.
And they don't like those numbers.
No. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. That was CJ and Troy there. A couple of people that I spoke to on the street this week having conversations about our topic. I hope you have enjoyed this week's topic and it might have given you some things to think about. And I'd love to hear from you if you have any comments on this discussion. You can email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'd love to hear what you think about this topic or any of the other ones I've done, about guests we've had or any guests you would like me to have. And also, if you want to connect with me on social media, you can send me a friend request on Facebook, connect with me on Twitter. My Twitter name is @RuthCopland. Well, coming up in the second hour, my special guest from the arts is entertainment industry veteran Tarquin Gotch, music manager and publisher, legendary A&R executive, film music supervisor and executive film producer. He's had quite the career, so I'm looking forward to talking to him. That's coming up in the second hour. Join me after the break.